This is my last sunny weekly update for a couple of weeks. So I am going full normal Gold Coast Aussie style and am very relaxably, comfortably attired today. So I'm obviously still home. I have been enjoying the sunshine here. I'm going back to Norway in 6 days from now. So the next weekly update may actually be a little bit delayed. So I'm going back to Norway to go snowboarding. So again, I'm like making the most of the sunshine right now and enjoying that because you don't get much sunshine in Norway at this time of year. But I'm going to go there to go snowboarding before the NDC security event in Oslo. So I'm actually going to make a little bit of a holiday out of this as well. I'm taking my 9-year-old son, Ari. So Ari's coming with me. He's a little gun on the skis, so he'll have a good time there. I'm going to meet up with Scott Helm as well, so we're going to all go on a little snowboarding trip together, as well as one of the organisers from NDC, and I'll see if she wants to be named or I'll speak on the next one or whatever it may be. But we're going to have a bit of fun for a few days away and try and not just sort of go to the other side of the world and just go absolutely non-stop at events and things. So we'll do that. We'll go to the NDC Security Conference in Oslo. I've got a 2-day workshop there. There are still spots available for that if anyone is listening to this and wants to come along to that event, which will be cool. And then we've got a 1-day conference, which will be Friday next week, which based on my calendar is going to be Friday 18. So that's cool too. We've done a couple of those in Norway before. We did one last year and we did one, I think, about 3 years ago as well, which was really neat. And of course, this is also the same as the one we've been doing on the Gold Coast, which we do around April from memory. We did last year. We're going to do again this year as well. And Scott will be back in Australia for that too. So we're going to be doing that in Norway. All of us are then going to London straight after that. And we're going to repeat a lot of that for the NDC proper. I mean, the security one's proper as well. But this is, you know, the NDC in London is not just security. It's all application development and everything as well. Another 2-day workshop and then 3 days of conferencing as well. And my son, Ari, is going to be doing a talk on how kids can learn to code as well. So we're kind of excited about that. Get him up there on the big stage on the other side of the world. He'll have a good story to tell when he comes home. And likewise, if you're in London and you want to come along to a Hack Yourself First workshop, I'll be running that one there again as well. So it is going to be a couple of busy, cold, rainy, because of London, weeks coming up. And I will be very differently attired for those. Now, having said that, I got a bunch of stuff today. Where do we start with this? Right. I tweeted yesterday about looking for some advice on server cabinets and some home networking stuff. So I have written before about how I basically just decked out my house with Ubiquiti gear a couple of years ago because I just got absolutely sick and tired of having crappy networking stuff. So I went and bought a heap of stuff and like totally overdid it, but it worked really, really well. And I wrote a blog post and it seems that people are really, really interested in fixing crappy networking and it got a lot of popularity and Ubiquiti and I have had a very nice relationship since. Because of that, they do send me some things. And as part of my building out of this network cabinet, they sent me a bunch of stuff and I'm going to try and pick it up. This is a very visual part. They sent me, oh shit, and I dropped a bit too. It's okay, it's on the chair. But all of this is going to go into the server cabinet. Now, at the moment, I have no server cabinet. And if I'm honest, what I have is a rather embarrassing mess of cables. It is absolutely atrocious. This house, when we moved into it, actually had every room wired for Ethernet. Two ports in every room. So there, and in fact, it's more than two ports for every room because there's a total of 32 patched points in the server cabinet. But it's one of these sort of dodgy consumer grade, like don't get me wrong, having a house like fully Ethernet wired and patchboard and everything is super, super cool. And it was one of the things that made me very excited about moving into it. But it's like one of these vertical home automation kind of ones with a 10 megabit switch next to it, which was never going to work. And consequently, I've got all of these patch leads coming out of the wall into 8-port Ubiquiti hubs because I just wired the ones that I needed to. And the whole thing's a mess. And, you know, now I'm just going to do it properly. So things that I have that are going in there include a Security Gateway Pro. So this is the USG. So this is effectively going to be the interface between my internal network and then the telco-provided router. I have, which frankly I don't know if I actually need, but they sent it, an aggregation switch. And I don't know if I need an aggregation switch because I'm really only going to have one switch in the cupboard. Unless I do something like take some of the 8-port switches and put some of those on a different VLAN and then I'll plug that into the aggregation switch. I don't know. The biggie, of course, is this 48-port PoE switch, which is going to run 32 wired ports into it. Obviously, there'll be a new rack-mounted patch board that will go in there. So that'll have 32 ports there. And then a bunch of the other ports will be used by other things plugged into the rack or sitting on shelves in the rack, including the thing that I just dropped down the back of my chair, which is the new CloudKey Pro. And you can actually get a rack mount for this as well, which seems a little bit pointless because it is actually very small. Beautifully packaged, by the way. Very Apple-esque in their packaging. Because it's got the little instructions that sit on the top, and then the unit itself, which I won't drop while it's not in the packaging, is actually quite small. So it's only like that. But you can get a rack mount. It's just obviously a 1RU rack, and that will go like that. So the tweet I put out the other day, and this is where I am actually looking for some input, is I'll probably put about an 18RU rack in there. I've got a total of about 130 centimeters worth of vertical space, still leaving room for cooling or airflow. And an 18RU takes up about a meter most of the time. So that's going to go in there. So there'll actually be a heap of space in there. There's a lot of stuff to go on shelves. So everything from a Raspberry Pi through to I have Arlo security cameras, which I hope to replace with the Unifi ones, which are a lot better, as soon as I can actually run Ethernet through to the place I want the cameras. And even things like I've got Philips Hue. So there's a Philips Hue hub and all sorts of other crap that you accumulate. So they'll sit on shelves. When I asked the question, I actually had a bunch of really, really interesting pieces of feedback come back about things that I didn't know existed. It is or has not really been my domain to build servers and racks. So this is a learning experience for me. Everything from obviously some cool lighting through to some of the server cabinet designs. What else did I see that was really cool? Even some things like instead of the normal lug nuts, which are a pain in the backside to fit into the holes in the rack, there's some other good replacements that make it very easy to do with fingers and not skinning them. If you have suggestions or cool ideas about effectively how to pimp my rack, and I know that sounds weird, but if you have ideas around that, you know what I mean, let me know. I'd be really curious to hear those. So this will take some time. The room it's going to go into, I'm reticent to say cupboard because it's actually quite large, it's going to go into, let's call it cupboard. Cupboard in the garage that does have plenty of airflow. That's got to be redone. We're getting some shelves put in there and a wine rack built and a whole bunch of storage. But we'll have lots of room and lots of airflow and everything else. So fortunately, I do have the space to do something kind of cool. Right, so that's that. That cupboard will get redone. The server will go in. I'll share more about that as it progresses. Now, into the InfoSec stuff. There is a list doing the rounds, and when I say list, it's more like a shitload of files, and what this is colloquially referred to as a combo list. So a combo list I've spoken about many times before, and this is going to lead us into the discussion about the blog post in a moment for this week's blog post. A combo list is a combination of usernames and passwords, normally email addresses and passwords, taken from different data breaches, all combined into one quote-unquote list, which you can then, not you guys, hopefully, bad guys, can then use as a source to try and authenticate to other people's accounts. Actually, in fairness, pen testers and the likes use these as well as part of their exercises so that, for argument's sake, they've got a job at a workplace, they want to see if people have been reusing credentials and that maybe that gets them into an account. So there is a white hat use for these things. Not normally a white hat use for this sort of thing. And I'll get to what I mean by that in a moment. So I have seen many of these lists in the past. I have loaded some of them into Have I Been Pwned. There's one called Anti-Public, was hundreds of millions of records. Another one called Exploit IN. A couple of other smaller ones. I see them really, really frequently, very often in the thousands, hundred thousands, even millions. The one that's popped up the last couple of days is a bit different for a number of reasons. And one of the reasons that makes it a bit different is multiple people have come to me and said, hey, have you seen this? And to be honest, for the most part, when one person pops up and says something like that, it's like, okay, well, yeah, this is just a normal day thing. When you start to see a trend, then you know that it's circulating a lot more. This is not just like one person who stumbled across it. And this particular list, I don't really want people to go and download this, so I'm going to be a little bit selective about what I say. But this list has been shared on a popular hacking forum. It talks about a collection of 2,000 plus dehashed databases. And inevitably, what is meant by dehashed is that if they were hashed in the first place, they've been cracked. Which, of course, when you store your things as MD5 or SHA-1, salt or no salt, stuff gets cracked very, very quickly. And it's about 2,000 plus databases. It's something like 86 gigabytes worth of data. There's a mega link that people have been sharing, you know, like the wasdkim.com, MegaNZ, been sharing around this link. This is exactly the same link multiple people have sent me. So I've pulled down this database. I'm having a look at it, and I need to work out whether it's suitable for Have I Been Pwned. There has been a list of alleged source sites shared as well. And the interesting thing is the list of alleged source sites is actually 2,890 rows long. And there's a bunch of stuff in here which I know of. I mean, things like Triple O web host. And that one sort of popped up because it's right at the start. But a whole bunch of IP addresses, a whole bunch of services I've never even heard of. And frankly, like we just don't know what's legit or what's not. But what I'm looking at the moment is going through extracting all the email addresses out of there. I have a feeling this may be a 10 figure list of email addresses, which would make loading it very interesting. So I'm going to pull that down. I'm going to go through and just take a random slice out of it and then try and figure out, is this stuff that's been seen before? And there's sort of two parts to that. So have these email addresses been seen in Have I Been Pwned before? Because if there's 99.9% of them already in there, then quite likely yes. For argument's sake, if it's 90% and then there's 10% of a billion that aren't in there, well, there's 100 million people that don't know that they've been in a data breach before. So that's one part of it. The other part of it, of course, is there's all these plain text passwords. So are these passwords that have been seen before, are they in Pwned passwords or are they not? And what I need to do is get these passwords out of these thousands of files and try and parse them out as reliably as I can, which won't be easy. See if they're in Pwned passwords or not. And again, get a sense of how unique is this data. Does it warrant the whole thing going into Have I Been Pwned? And if it does go into Have I Been Pwned, it will be a combination of both the email addresses and the passwords. And one thing I've learned from loading this sort of list before is that email addresses alone, some people kind of lose their minds about it because they're like, you've just told me I've been breached, but you haven't told me where, and now I don't know what to do. And I said, well, I don't know where, and I'm not going to give you your password. We've had this discussion before. But if I load the email addresses and the passwords and you find your email address in there and then you go through and you check some of your common passwords, which I know many of you have, and you find that as well, well, now you've got a pretty good idea what you should be changing. Plus, of course, if you were using 1Password, the application 1Password, you can go through and check every password in your keychain against Pwned passwords. So it's not that I want to make a lot of work for myself right before I go away, but I am kind of curious to actually see what's in there. Now just, if I just move this massive switch off my laptop, which does the processing, yeah, having a look at the data that's popping up here at the moment, it's just running the export process across all these files now. It's going to take a while. But it's just going, yeah, this file's got 9 million unique accounts. This one's got 7. This one's got 8. Like, there's just a ridiculously large amount of data in here. So it might take a little while, A, to process it, B, to figure out what to do with it, and definitely C, to load it. This may not be something that can even happen in the next week. I don't know that it's too time critical, other than the fact that it's obviously now circulating a lot more, but it does seem to relate to incidents that have quite possibly happened quite some time ago. The list of alleged sources, which I've taken a copy of and I will put in a blog post if I do publish this, does have lots of file dates that, you know, looking at this, are even back in like 2010. A lot of them had file dates of 2018. Doesn't necessarily mean the incident happened in 2018. It could have just been when the file was written to the system. But the mere fact that a lot of them are actually much earlier years obviously indicates that this is data that's been collected over some period of time. So I'll come back to that, but now that we are on the credential stuffing discussion, let's actually talk about this week's blog post, which was about Spotify. And this originally, the intention was this was literally going to be like a 5-minute blog post. And then I started digging a little bit and went, this deserves a little bit more attention. And the premise of it was that I often have people contact me and say, I just got a notification from Have I Been Pwned about a paste. So yeah, basically just text, which has been put on Pastebin. Got a notification. It's my Spotify credentials. The title of the paste is Spotify Hack. It's got Spotify data. Spotify has been breached. And I see this over and over and over again. I see Spotify more than any other service I can think of by an order of magnitude, more than eBay or Amazon or any of these sort of things. I see Spotify just time and time and time again. And it's not Spotify. Well, actually, let's sort of clarify this. It is not data that has been taken from Spotify via a SQL injection risk, or they haven't backed up their users and left it in S3 bucket or something like that. What it is, every time I see this, is credential stuffing. And credential stuffing is effectively using lists like the freaking massive one I was just speaking about with email addresses and passwords, taking those email addresses and passwords and checking them against another service to see if they work. So if I, like most people, was to reuse the same password on Spotify as, let's say, LinkedIn, and someone's got that email address and password from LinkedIn, and then they go and plug it into Spotify, and Spotify goes, yeah, now you're logged on, that's not Spotify being breached in the traditional way that we would think of a data breach. That is someone reusing their password. Now, we'll talk about the mechanics, and then we'll talk about the ethics and who's responsible and everything. So that's sort of the basics of where these lists come from. Now, the interesting sort of aspect of this, and this is where the blog post kind of took a bit more time than I expected, is the automation of this process. This is not like some bloke just sitting there going, I'm going to manually enter someone's email address and password. This is automated tools. And in this blog post, I sort of said, look, I took one of the strings that was in one of these alleged Spotify breaches, and the string talked about Spotify Cracker. So you go to Google, you do a search for Spotify Cracker, immediately you come up with a tool here called Spotify Brute, which is one of many different tools that people build to try and brute force authentication on the Spotify service. And I actually embedded a little video here where it shows someone using another tool that was very similar. They take a combo list, however many email addresses and passwords they pass into this tool, and it just goes through trying every account against Spotify. When there's a hit, these tools tend to save the Spotify subscription type. So for example, subscription type of premium. Now I assume that once you're authenticated, there's either an API or they scrape it off a page somewhere by passing whatever auth token comes back. So that now what you can get out of this process is you can get the email address and the password, so that's in the combo list, but now you've authenticated to Spotify, so you can also bring back the subscription. This one just here shows a recurring date. This one here also shows a status, premium for students, and also the country. So this is a highly automated, non-personal thing. It's not that the hackers don't like you, you're just in a combo list. This is all it is. So this is interesting, the way it is automated en masse. And I guess that sort of the first part of the reason why I wrote this is to have a resource to point people to when people pop up and say Spotify has been breached. And at least I can say, look, they haven't. In fact, I changed the title. Originally, my title, I had Spotify almost certainly hasn't been breached, because I'm always a little bit reticent. Like, they could have an incident, right? I'm a bit reticent to say that it just simply hasn't happened. But certainly all the evidence points towards credential reuse and credential stuffing. So I'll be able to point people here, and this is sort of one of the first purposes of this. I want to sort of talk about two parts of why this is happening. And like, let's talk about the obvious one, which is credential reuse. It is happening, or it is enabled, because people reuse their credentials. Now, when I talk about things like that, some people get very upset and they say, you're victim blaming because you are accusing the person who has been the subject of this attack of doing something wrong, whereas they are actually the victim of the attack. By the way, if you hear banging, we're actually building a fireplace. Another story, I'll talk about that later. Cool, flashy lights, different thing. Now, there is some truth to this in that, yes, I am blaming the victim for reusing their password. That's because the victim reused the password. Like, there's just not a way to sugarcoat this. There's not a way to say, oh, no, you did nothing wrong. It is doing something wrong if we reuse your passwords. Everybody knows this. But look, I've written before about it's not victim blaming and everything. That's linked to in this blog post. If you're upset about victim blaming, read the post. It is something that happens. We need to try and encourage people not to reuse their passwords. We want them to do something different to what they're doing. This is why you'll see one password all over Have I Been Pwned. I want people to go and get a password manager and actually create strong, unique credentials. Unfortunately, they can't turn on 2FA on Spotify because Spotify has no 2FA. So the best possible thing someone with a Spotify account can do is a strong, unique password. Let's talk about the other bit, which is how this keeps happening, because I gotta be honest, like, I look at this and I think, why does Spotify continue to have this problem so much more extensively than other online organizations? Now, this is very anecdotal observations. And as I said earlier, I just keep getting people continually pointing me to Spotify quote unquote breaches. So I don't know if there's just like a, if there's just simply an API endpoint out there that has, for example, no anti-automation. And all you do is you just make a request with a username and a password and a post body and like that's it. Like if that's all it is, that is vastly insufficient. In fact, whatever they're doing at the moment, I would argue it's probably vastly insufficient because of the volume of these attacks we see. So there is without doubt some responsibility on Spotify's behalf to try and reduce the rate of this credential stuffing issue. I will say, however, that the number of people that kind of popped up online and said, well, Spotify should stop that happening, you know, or Spotify is entirely to blame. And I am sympathetic to Spotify and other organizations in this situation because, like, picture the scenario here. Somebody goes to Spotify, makes a request with the right username and the right password for an account. And you, as Spotify, need to stop that. Because although the credentials are right, they're not the actual person who owns them. That is a non-trivial problem. And for everyone who says, well, you should just not allow multiple requests from different IPs for the same username or from the same IP for different usernames. People have literally hundreds of thousands of IP addresses which they can call on. They're either routing through proxies or compromised machines or all sorts of other things. It's a non-trivial problem. And there are companies out there that do sell solutions and they're not cheap because the companies know they're a non-trivial problem. And for a service like Spotify that provides a pretty low-cost subscription-based model, I can imagine that there's someone in Spotify doing the ROI on it going, we could fix this problem, but it's going to cost us money, so we're not going to. I don't know if that's the case or not. All I'm saying is I can see how an organization like Spotify would do the ROI on that and say it's not real good. I would love them to use something like Pwned Passwords. Because every single time I see these Spotify lists, they're shit passwords that have already been in Pwned Passwords, and they can go and get that for free. But I can also see how such a massive consumer-centric service might also say, well, we're actually worried about the impact on usability. But, you know, in here, I gave an example. One of these passwords from one of these combo lists has been seen 1,743 times before. That password, which password was that? It was the password 15121997. I'm not even sure if they have complexity rule requirements. There's another story about whether we should or should not have those. But I would argue that a password like that, particularly one that's been seen 1,700 odd times, is probably not a very good password to let people use. It's going to predispose them to having issues like this. If anyone from Spotify does actually listen to this, I'll keep it all private, but I'd just love to hear what is going on and why this keeps happening. So that's that one. That kind of wraps up the credential stuffing thing. We'll see what I have to share next week about what I do with that massive list. Just one thing while I'm thinking of data breaches and everything as well. Blog posts. The blog post I did on financial advice for technology professionals absolutely blew up. And still to this date, I've only had that one negative comment that I mentioned last week, which is very nice. So I was looking at my Google Analytics and over a period, which is normally pretty quiet as well, it's had 42,000 page views, which is massively lowballing it because so many people have ad blockers or pie holes or things like that that actually block this. So I don't know, maybe it's like 60,000 people that have read the post. But it makes me very, very happy because it was something that I put a lot of effort into and people have obviously got some value out of. So thank you very much for everyone that's read and commented on that. Incidentally, there's some very good comments in there as well. So do check those out. Okay, so last bits here. Sponsorship. We are in a brand new year. This is the first full week of the brand new year, and I mentioned I was going to have some new sponsors on. So this week's sponsor is Twilio. And this is the first week that Twilio has sponsored my blog, and you will see them many times throughout the remainder of the year as well. Now, you probably think of Twilio as SMSs. Certainly, that's the connotation that most frequently comes to me. SMSs and often having a very good coffee stand at conferences. So it's very often the Twilio coffee stand I go to. Now, that's not what they're promoting at the moment. Twilio also owns Authy. So they bought Authy back in 2014, I think it was. And Authy is a fantastic soft token implementation for you to add 2FA to your websites. 2FA, two-step verification, argue amongst yourselves. And certainly I have been a big proponent of Authy many, many times before. And in fact, when I wrote my blog post around Google Advanced Protection Program and then the different tiers of 2FA, I said, look, Authy is probably the most cost-effective, easily accessible 2FA, two-step verification, whatever implementation you can do. So this week they're talking about how to use the Authy API to easily add more than just SMS 2FA. Which, when I first read it, it's like, but Twilio does SMS. Ah, yeah, but they own Authy, and Authy does the thing with the soft tokens as well. So they've got a piece up there about how to add 2FA into your web application or other application, I would assume, using Authy. And this is well worth a read because you can do this really, really cost effectively, and you can offer it to subscribers of your site. Are you listening Spotify? So go and check that out. So that's cool. You're going to see Twilio a bunch. Incidentally, what you'll see over, particularly over sort of the next, where are we, six and a bit months, is alternating weeks between Twilio and another sponsor who I'll talk about next week. While I'm here, just to sort of wrap up on the sponsor thing, because there are a few changes I've made. This, I think I'm about nearly 18 months into the sponsorship model, and it's fantastic, and it is, as far as I can see, the only thing I'm going to be doing in the future. The old traditional ads are dead and gone. There's no more iframes or other people's active content on the site, no more trackers or anything like that. That said, there are things that I need to do to improve. And one of the things that I have done, in fact, let's talk about two of the things that I've done in response to last year. One of them was there was a sponsor who was using DoubleClick links so that you'd see their message, you'd click on it, and you'd go through DoubleClick. This is for them to track the effectiveness of their sponsorship placement. And now I don't have a problem with that. And I encourage sponsors, look, you want to know if this is working for you, so do track the inbound clicks. The problem is that when they used a service like DoubleClick, that's exactly the sort of thing that's blocked by pie holes and by ad blockers and things like this. And they sent me the link and I clicked it and it didn't work. And it took me a bit to figure out it was the pie hole. And then I had it up there and it never worked for me. And then at some point, one of them recently, for some reason, their DoubleClick, you know, effectively proxy through to their server stopped working. So their tracking code or something expired, I don't know. So one of the things I've done now is I've said, look, you cannot link through an intermediary which is frequently blocked by subscribers or readers of my site. So, you know, obviously, particularly given the sort of content I write, there's a bunch of privacy-centric-minded, what are they? Privacy-minded people. And I don't want my audience coming to my site, seeing a sponsorship message, which is there to try and get rid of all the traditional trackers and something and everything else, and then like clicking it and then it doesn't work because tracking. So I've just gotten rid of that altogether. Organizations can track that on the inbound links. In fact, you'll see Twilio. Well, like when you have a look at that link, they are using tracking tags, but they are linking directly through to Twilio.com. And I'm quite okay with that. Once you get to Twilio.com, they can do whatever inbound tracking they want, but at least you can get to their site. The other thing, and this is a bit more delicate, I'm not going to name names here, but there are some sponsors that I've effectively put a little flag next to and said, look, I'm not going to send them an email to invite them back again. Not because they have done anything wrong per se, but there were a couple of occasions where my messaging started to deviate from their messaging. And some of you can probably join the dots on that. But part of the challenge was that I was lining up some sponsors up to a year in advance. And a lot can happen in a year. And there were a couple there where we just sort of went off in different directions. And it became hard where my messaging was starting to be counter to the messaging that was sitting on top of it. And this really defines the difference between traditional advertisements, where it's basically just someone putting whatever they want to broadcast via your channel, and the sponsorship model, which is let's have someone that I actually work closely with, I talk to, and I agree with what their product is. So one of the things I'm going to do to try and stop that, in fact, one of these in particular, I end up saying, look, I just can't run your sponsorship slot because it conflicts so heavily with the message I was pushing. So one of the things I'm trying to do to stop that is, rather than sort of booking out a year in advance, never book out more than 6 months in advance. So I've effectively halved the window of which we can deviate in our views. And hopefully that means that it doesn't sort of stop this from happening, but that deviation would be smaller by the time I get to say, look, it's probably not a good thing moving forward that we keep this relationship. So I wanted to explain that because I want people to understand that I do give a lot of thought to who sits in that sponsorship slot. Organizations like Twilio and Authy match very, very closely with the message that I'm pushing. And then if ever we sort of went off with totally different viewpoints in life, for whatever reason that may be, there's only a shorter period of time which we can go off in those different directions. So that is it for this week. This is the weirdness of my life these days. After I finish this up, I've got to get my jet ski and take Kevin Mitnick jet skiing out to an island. Now, if you don't know who Kevin Mitnick is, do a quick Google. Very, very interesting bloke. If you do and you haven't read Ghost in the Wires, have a read of Ghost in the Wires. It is a really fascinating book. It's one of the few sort of infosec-y books I've read over the years, which I couldn't put down. So a very interesting guy. I'm hoping he doesn't socially engineer the jet ski out of me. I'm prepared for that. I'm going to keep the key on my wrist all the time. I don't know. But that's what I'm off to this afternoon. I might get some photos of that and share that. And that will have happened by the time you watch this video. And hopefully I won't get as stuck on a beach in a boat like I did last year when you visited. So anyway, we shall see. There might be some interesting pictures later on. So thank you for watching. Next week, I will come to you from Norway, much more robustly dressed than what I am today. See you later, guys.